This is Director Jared Maples of the New Jersey Office of Homeland Security and Preparedness, and I want to welcome you to Season 2 of Intelligence Unclassified. This season, we are refocusing our episodes to better reflect our office's three core mission areas: counterterrorism, cybersecurity, and emergency preparedness. We'll be pulling both local and national experts in these three fields, all in an effort to discuss New Jersey's diverse threat landscape and offer you a unique perspective on the current trends and issues facing the Garden State. If this is your first time listening, then thanks for coming. Please feel free to add this podcast to your RSS feed or iTunes. You can also follow NJOHSP on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at NJOHSP. All links can be found in the show notes and on our website at www.njhomelandsecurity.gov.
Hello, everyone. Today I'm here with Patrick James. He's a researcher at START and project manager for the Profiles of Individual Radicalization in the United States, or the PIRUS Project. This project seeks to explain the underlying mechanisms and processes of domestic radicalization. He earned his BA in International Studies from the University of North Texas and his MA in International Studies from the University of Denver, focusing on political violence, Middle East policy, and international security issues. Prior to joining START, Patrick worked with the One Earth Future Foundation, a think tank located near Denver, Colorado, that seeks to reduce global conflict by promoting better global governance. He also is a research assistant with the Program on Terrorism and Insurgency Research based out of the University of Denver. Thank you very much, Patrick, for being with us here today.
Thank you, Paige, and thank you for the extensive introduction.
Of course. So first of all, for those of our listeners who are unfamiliar with this database, can you tell us the purpose of PIRUS, why it was created?
Sure. So the PIRUS database, or Profiles of Individual Radicalization in the United States, we started this project back in 2013 with the grants from the National Institute of Justice. And back then, those years ago, there wasn't really a firm foundation for understanding radicalization. Any research on the topic was typically based off of case studies or anecdotes, if they used data at all. And so our purpose of the project was to be the ones to provide empirical data on extremism in the United States, including key information on the radicalization processes and the mechanisms. Building from that, the purpose of the project is then to provide analyses using rigorous methods on these data, and then to produce empirically derived policy recommendations. The data set right now is 1,473 individuals in the United States from 1948 to 2013. And the data has been recently released on START's website. So if anyone wants to go to our website, www.start.umd.edu, they can download the data for themselves, download the codebook, and start playing with the data.
That's great. So I've seen some reports from START on the PIRUS database, and among those were some noticeable trends that they were able to pull out. Some work on far-left extremism, and also some focus on the duration of radicalization from, you know, far-right versus far-left extremists. Can you tell us a little bit about those trends?
Sure. So when we look at the PIRUS data across time, we do come across some trends. Notably, we can see when different ideologies sort of had their heyday in the United States. So looking back at the late 60s and early 70s, we see sort of the peak of far-left activity in the U.S. with groups like the Weather Underground, the Black Panther Party, United Freedom Front, groups like that. As time moved on, of course, we see the rise of the far right, especially in the 80s and 90s. Incidents like Waco, Ruby Ridge, and Oklahoma City bombing are really sort of the key points of that trend. But it just kind of points at the general rise of the militia movement, anti-government movement, and we have that in PIRUS. And then, of course, not surprisingly, after 9/11, we see a huge uptick in Islamist-related arrests and cases in the United States. But beyond the trends, we do see some consistency in the data. So across almost all time periods, we find that radicalization is actually a distinctly social process. So I know we hear a lot about loners, lone wolves in the media, but we found that about 90% of cases in PIRUS had some sort of close social connection to an extremist in their social network. So the idea that we had with this new novel threat of lone wolves, we should definitely, you know, pay attention to it, but not lose sight of the fact that radicalization seems to be driven primarily by social drivers. Another thing we can do with the data is actually compare trends across different ideological groups. So we can find out what's similar, what's different about the far left, the far right, Islamist cases. One of the interesting things we found was that the duration of radicalization, that is the time from the first evidence that the person started to develop radical beliefs, to when they actually acted on them tends to vary across different ideological categories, the far right being the longest of all of them. So typically in the Pirates data set, those who are part of a far right movement, they may not be actually involved in any sort of activity until they're in their 30s and sometimes 40s. Whereas when you look at the far left at Islamists, they tend to be much younger, in their early to mid 20s. So that sort of points at some of the things that any policymaker needs to keep in mind when they're developing any sort of program, is that they may be dealing with entirely different sort of audiences. Another thing that we found lastly was that there's actually very little evidence of prison radicalization, despite some of the fears that we hear sometimes in the media about the risk of, you know, for example, Muslim inmates radicalizing U.S. prisons. We found very little evidence of that in the data. And when there was evidence, it seemed to be consistent across ideologies.
Wow, I think it really shows the importance of data sets like PIRUS, because they're able, through analysis, to kind of dispel some of those myths we have about radicalization and these preconceived notions. In the future, what kind of research would you like to see come out of PIRUS?
We have a lot of ideas of what we'd like to do with PIRUS. One of the most interesting and exciting things we want to do is move PIRUS from beyond looking at only the individual level and start bringing in other layers of analysis. So adding in a social network component would be really interesting for us to see how individuals of PIRUS start to relate to one another, what those connections are like, whether or not that has any sort of impact on an individual's capacity or propensity to commit violence. So starting to layer in that meso, that medium level of analysis, and also looking at the community level factors. So did the person grow up in a community that with abject poverty? Did they come from a community that had high or low unemployment? Just adding in these other layers of data, I think, would be really interesting for us to get a more complete picture of how somebody may come to adopt extremist beliefs.
Yeah, I look forward to seeing that work. How do you foresee the intel community or practitioners using PIRUS?
I think it's going to be really useful, maybe not as a primary tool of, first of all, it's a sample. So it's not a comprehensive data set of everyone who's radicalized in the U.S. And so anybody who wants to get, you know, specific information on one person is probably looking at the wrong data set. I think PIRUS, its strength is looking at radicalization from a 10,000 foot view, seeing major trends. For example, the prison radicalization one, I think it's the idea of you have some sort of preconceived notion of what extremism or radicalization looks like. It looks like in the United States, any intel analyst can go into the PIRUS data set and look at the data themselves to then, you know, see if that's actually borne out in the data. So I think it's going to be useful as sort of a tool used to either confirm or disprove, you know, pre-existing sort of notions, or looking at the larger trends of radicalization.
Yeah, I know here at OHSP, we do use PIRUS and also STAART's other databases to help guide our products. And that's really, I think, the value of STAART and what it's able to provide to the intel community. So I understand the data is from 1948 to 2013. Does STAART have any intention of continuing the database to present day?
Absolutely. That's what we're doing right now. This past year, we've been working on adding new cases from the past 3 or 4 years, trying to update PIRUS through 2017. That data will be out, we hope, later this year with an update to the data set on our website. So users who are using the PIRUS data right now, they can look forward to that. We've also added some new variables that may be of interest. So when we started out coding data for the PIRUS data set, you know, something like social media wasn't really a variable that people had a lot of interest in necessarily. Interest in social media has grown in the past couple of years, and so we've actually gone back and tried to add variables relevant to that question into the data. So we'll be able to roll that out. So looking to update the data, not only in terms of new cases, but also expanding the variables that we're looking at. Look out for that, I think, in the fall or maybe in the winter of 2017, some sort of update to PIRUS.
That's great. I'm sure most of the listeners are looking forward to that new release from the PIRUS dataset. Thank you so much, Patrick James, for joining us. And for those of you who are interested in, you know, more products from STAART, please feel free to visit their website.
Thanks so much, Paige, for having me. I really appreciate it.
Again, all links can be found in the show notes and on our website at www.njhomelandsecurity.gov. If you have any ideas or topics for future episodes, please contact us on Twitter at NJOHSP or email us at intelunclass@njohsp.gov. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to subscribe to Intelligence Unclassified.